Welcome to the Manufacturing Executive Podcast, where we explore the strategies and experiences that are driving mid-sized manufacturers forward. Here, you'll discover new insights from passionate manufacturing leaders who have compelling stories to share about their successes and struggles. And you'll learn from B2B sales and marketing experts about how to apply actionable business development strategies inside your business. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Manufacturing Executive Podcast. I'm Joe Sullivan, your host and a co-founder of the industrial marketing agency Guerrilla 76, where we help B2B manufacturers grow through revenue-focused marketing programs. The more manufacturing leaders you talk to, the more opinions and perspectives you'll hear about why we're struggling to pull young millennials and Gen Zers into the industrial sector workforce. General awareness issues, a perception of dirty, dark, and dangerous jobs, negative associations among youth and their parents about a career path other than go to college and get a white-collar job. In today's conversation, we'll hear directly from the source, a Gen Zer whose energy and passion alone make this episode worth listening to. He has been in the manufacturing workforce since he was 15 years old, and he's seen a lot already. His perspective about why we're missing the boat with Gen Zers will get you thinking. Let me introduce him. Jacob Sanchez is an industry awareness and next generation advocate for manufacturing and the skilled trades. With 10 plus years of hands-on experience in manufacturing and automation, Jacob uses his knowledge to revolutionize how our industry creates digital content for the world. Jacob believes through education and creative thinking, we can reshape the image of our industry to the world. Jacob, welcome to the show.
How's it going, brother? I'm so hyped.
Awesome. Yeah, it's really great to have you here. We've kind of met digitally. We've exchanged messages. I don't know. I think at one point we may have talked, but I've been kind of observing what you've been doing over the last couple of years. And what I really love is you're this sort of very publicly visible Gen Z advocate for American manufacturing. And we need more people doing the exact type of stuff you're doing. I just love the energy that you bring, and your LinkedIn feed is really fun. For anybody listening, now go follow Jacob on LinkedIn and just see all the stuff you're doing, traveling around the country, going to shows, talking to all the names in manufacturing. And I think just bring in that energy that we need from young folks around this space. So love seeing the big smile on your face and just seeing what you're doing all the time. So it's great to have you here.
Thanks, brother. I'm excited, man. I mean, that energy, it's funny. It was never directed towards manufacturing and automation or anything useful, but it's always been there ever since I was a kid. You said that you loved my story. I don't know where you heard it. I've said it on a few podcasts. I tell different ones each time, but you liked my Halloween candy story.
Yes, yes. You got to tell that. I was going to ask you about it. So I'll let you just sort of transition in there however you'd like.
When I was in, I was probably in third or fourth grade. I've never been a big candy guy, not a sweets kid, but I would go trick-or-treating. And I would go trick-or-treating not because like I wanted to eat the candy, but because I knew that like the other kids would run out of their candy super fast. And so I'd hit all these houses, I'd get all this candy, and I'd save it, and I'd put it in like smaller baggies. And then after everybody else runs out of their Halloween candy, I would go around in like third grade selling like these little baggies of Halloween candy. And then I would save all that money up to like towards the end of the year where they'd have like the book festival and stuff. And I'd buy like Christmas presents for my grandparents and stuff.
That's great, man. Well, hey, at least you put it to good use buying presents for your grandparents rather than reinvesting in your Halloween candy hustler business. But, you know,
that was one of the good cases. The other one, I don't know if you've heard, was when I was in a kindergarten and I took over. And this just speaks to my little rebel without a cause, like Neanderthal upbringing. I took over the playset in kindergarten and they said, this is what they say, I couldn't defend myself. They said that I would make the kids pay me in bark to use the slide.
No way.
In my defense, the bark was everywhere. So when this kid came up with no bark, and he's like, I'm not going to pay you a bark, apparently I pushed him off of the playset.
Oh, no. First detention.
First of many, my friend.
That's so funny. You know, I've got three kids. I got 9, 7, and 2. And probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, we bought a book just a little kid's book, picture book. It's called Rulers of the Playground. You should go look it up. And it's exactly what you're describing, where it's like this little kid, and there's two of them. They each took over a different part of the playground and made themselves the king and queen and made everybody follow their rules. And it didn't turn out well for them in the end. And then they kind of learned their lesson and learned how to be better friends and just how to share. And this, so it was like something behind it. But it's exactly what I was thinking of when you just started telling that. So awesome. Well, so the energy has always been there. You've had that, and you've found out how to kind of found your passion in manufacturing and putting that energy to good use. I'd love to hear just a little bit of your backstory. Tell our listeners just kind of, how'd you get into manufacturing? Well, you know, I know you were over at Titans of CNC for a while, but I'd love to hear just kind of, you know, where'd you go after your Halloween candy hustling days?
Yes. After my Rebel Without a Cause upbringing up until high school, because it lasted all the way until then. The way that I got into manufacturing was cooking class when I was signing up for electives my freshman year was full. I signed up to go to cooking class. I signed up for home ec because I wanted the easy A in a new school, little rich city, different than where I grew up. And I was like, I just want to get in, get out. Like, my family just drilled into me all throughout my life. Like, not Jacob, go be like a doctor, go be a lawyer. Like, Jacob, just graduate high school. Like, that was my goal. But as all the other freshmen wanted as well, an easy A, cooking class was full. So they throw you into whatever's open. So I got thrown into the engineering support technology class, which was the manufacturing shop, the engineering class, and all that. So that started my little angry journey through manufacturing, because obviously I got thrown into this engineering class as a C-minus kid growing up, and I was pissed. I was furious. I was like, why am I here? This is dumb. We did like the ice-breaking exercises where you have to build like a paper airplane out of construction paper, and whoever goes the furthest, like, you get to win a little prize, or the marble mazes out of construction paper. And you would do all the, like, an architectural class. And I hated every second of it. I hated every moment of my life in that class. And it wasn't until I just like didn't like going home a lot. So I asked the teacher, I was like, hey, like, I see you have like some stuff. I saw through a big window, the shop, because this was all in the computer class. Freshman year, you don't get to go to the shop. I was like, hey, I see like stuff back there. It looks dirty. Can I like just stay after school, clean it, so I don't have to go home? And he was like, yeah. And long story short with that, he started secretly teaching me as I was cleaning and made me ask questions. And then he would start showing me, I'm a freshman getting to run the manual lathe. And I made my first ring. And that just made me go down a rabbit hole of, I'm not supposed to be able to do this, but I'm doing it. People think it's crazy. I want to get after it more. So I spent the rest of my high school career, every moment, every class, I would finish a test in math. And then I'd raise my hand and say, hey, can I go to Frank's class, which was the engineering class? And the teachers that knew me said yes, because the teachers that didn't know me, if they said no, I would just go to the bathroom and then go to Frank's class. So I was still a little rambunctious, I guess, in high school, but I did it for a good cause. And so that's what got me started. And as you said, with Titans of CNC, they were 15 minutes down the road from Rockland High School. I went to Rockland High, and I was one of the first people ever in the world, because it was me and my buddy. I like to say I was the first. He likes to say he was the first, whatever. I was the first person outside of the prison system, because where the academy got started, to ever make a Titans of CNC part in my hand. When there was no website, there was three prints, and Titan came to the school because my mentor, Stuart McConaughey, who was the lead foreman at Titans, was my mentor and mentored some of my classmates in our program. And so Titan came in and said, hey, I want to give you guys tooling. I want to see if you guys can help me build. And he told us the whole vision for the academy. And so I was in the first promo video. I made the first Titans of CNC part outside of the prison system. And after that, man, I got to go to award ceremonies. I got to go to machinist meetups with like 40-year-old men, owners of businesses. I'm like 16 and a half, 17. And I'm telling them how I think like we could help better the industry. And he hired me right out of high school. After I turned 18, we turned that shop into the number one advanced manufacturing program in the state of California. And he hired me. So I started my career actually hands-on doing aerospace, medical, automotive, running four machines a day, two op A's, one op B, and then usually a program or a setup. And that was 18. That was 15 and a half to 18 years old of my life. And then I worked at tie-ins to build eventually the website, eventually the building blocks, eventually the Aerospace Academy, all the stuff that you see now from when I was 18 to 22, 21. So I've known the man for 6 years.
That's really cool, man. You know, what I'd love to be able to get to the bottom of, you know, the best we can, I think it's just a topic that so many people are interested in is like, how do you, you know, does it take a special kind of person? Is it take like what you got exposed to some stuff by accident pretty much, right?
Yeah.
It's funny. It's kind of almost similar to my story in like the world of, I thought I was gonna be an architect. I got put in the wrong class. It was a graphic design class and I fell in love with it. And I went to college to be an art director. That's how I got into marketing and advertising. And here I am, you know, 20 years later running an agency, but you kind of wound up there by accident in this like engineering manufacturing world, but something obviously stuck where you were, you know, you fell in love with it. There like a passion emerged and, you know, had you not accidentally, or, you know, maybe not accidentally, but there wasn't room in the cooking class. Right. So like, there was something that just kind of exposed you to it unexpectedly. If it weren't for that, maybe you wouldn't be talking about manufacturing right now.
Oh, absolutely.
What's it take to get more young people just exposed to it so that they don't only fall into it by accident? Like, what's your take on that?
So the biggest thing, and let's use for an example right now, let's not use a use it from an awareness standpoint. Let's say holistically, whether, and this works for whether you're in school, whether you have young people coming into your business, let's say they are already in that school, in that class, already in the business, but they're new, they're not experts, they're learning. The biggest thing that you can do to keep them engaged, to help fan their passion for what it is that we do in this industry, is autonomy. The biggest thing that I was given in that class was autonomy to do not just the classwork, because I, going through that whole program, I didn't do the normal classwork that all the other kids were doing. I got to do my own special projects. I got to do these things that, as long as they aligned with what the teacher knew I needed to learn, he was okay with. Some people call it privilege. I call it autonomy and trust, because if that teacher didn't trust me to be in the shop at 16 with one of my other classmates to look after each other, I wouldn't be in there. If he didn't believe that I was doing what I needed to do in the class, in my projects, to actually learn, if he thought I was screwing around, which when I did screw around, I got in trouble. I got not punished, but I had the right feedback for it. You know what I mean? But I was given that autonomy to teach myself and also help others, which is something that you don't see a lot in business. You see, I am hiring you to do this role. I am hiring you for this job. You are going to do that job in exchange for money. And if you do that job well, you will get a bigger sum of money. But you don't see any type of autonomy in learning and growth. So people, that's where you start really getting those quiet quitters. You get in those people putting in, if this is how much money you're going to give me to do the work, I'm going to give you this much energy right here. You're not getting any more. And I think that's why you see a lot of that. And I think it's also why you see not just young people, but I've had 35-year-olds, 40-year-olds tell me their story of entering our industry from like medical or therapy. I think that's why you see a lot of them fall off the path, because you put them in these structured silos, which we're used to as business owners, as industry professionals. That's how it's been the past 30 years. Your welders don't do the CNC machinist job, right? But that was something that it allowed me to explore and allowed me to learn in a different way, and in a way that I felt that I was shaping my skill set.
Interesting. So you kind of need that creative space, that room to sort of explore what's actually interesting to you, in addition to, or maybe as opposed to, or in addition to, you know, what's required of you. Everybody's got a job they need done, right, that they're hiring people for. But I agree that there's, I see this in my world, you know, I've got a team of 35 people, and a lot of them are very creative writers, designers, developers, and they need that kind of sandbox to explore the things that are interesting to them, that they're passionate about, as opposed to just following a checklist of processes and everything they do. So, you know, this, I think this kind of ties into what you were saying, but you were telling me in a conversation we had a couple of weeks ago that we're trying to fish for talent in an ocean when we have a lake right in front of us with students who are interested right now. And is that kind of what you're getting at there? Like, you have people who are interested, but we're not giving them the opportunities or the freedom. Tell me a little bit what you meant when you said that.
So this one's a little different. So when I was talking about autonomy, you already have those people. They are in your business. They are in your class. You have their attention. You are in front of them. It's a chance to help them grow, help your business grow in a different way. My fishing analogy with why are we fishing in this ocean and complaining about not catching anything when there's like a lake right behind us is this. So I'm a first robotics judge. I've been judging first robotics for the past 6 years. Worldwide competition from first graders all the way up until 12th graders that build robots, Lego robots, little bit bigger robots, and then big, big robots in high school. And I go to these competitions. There are hundreds and thousands of students in this organization around the world, and then thousands and thousands at the competitions I go to, California, Texas, Michigan. And they're excited. They feel fulfilled. Each of these teams is a mini business, Joe. I'm telling you, they have a salesperson that talks to like the judges. They have a marketing team. They have a budgetary team, depending on the size and stuff. This is the structure. And then they have a build team, a drive team, and a programming team. That's a business. And when these kids are going out into other businesses to get funding, that's partnership. That's relationship building. And so I'm watching all this happen, and it didn't hit me until maybe a year ago, where I'm looking at all of this and I'm like, where are the Fanex?
Oh, yeah.
Where are the KUKAs? Where are the Shunks? Where are all these companies? Even not the big name brands. Where are these integrators? Where are these OEMs? Where are my friends like at these competitions to talk with these kids about a path that they can follow and go down? And that's when it hit me, man, is we're complaining about this skills gap and we're still thinking about it like 10, 15 years ago when it was a visibility issue, which it still somewhat is. But when I'm looking at organizations like this, it's not a visibility issue. It's a fact that we're not going out there as business owners, as leaders in our organization from an HR standpoint, business development, to recruit these kids. And it really hit me when I went to a St. Joe competition, which is near the headquarters for Whirlpool in America. And Whirlpool had a representative there. They sponsored the event. He's got a mic up there. He has these kids in the stands, like cheering and clapping, raising their hands to work at Whirlpool. And I'm sitting there looking around like, this is insane. That's fishing in the lake. That's fishing in the lake because you're looking for some trout and you're hungry. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're going to get. And so that's what we need to do more of, is not think that, oh, they'll come to us if they see us. We need to be going to these kids that are already ridiculously passionate. And maybe they feel like they have to go to college because it's their only choice. Show them that they can come work for us. Because, dude, they are ridiculously smart, ridiculously talented. And you have to interact with them in a different way. But that's just what happens as you have newer generations coming out with new technologies and things like that in front of them since they were babies, you know?
What a great point. I mean, and such a missed opportunity. Do you see a lot of these kids in these first robotics competitions, as the older ones, I guess I'm probably referring to, that wind up down different paths because maybe nobody's there to try to bring them into manufacturing? Like, is that what's going on?
And a lot of the times, if you don't have a good company to like help get you on that path, because these kids know where coding can get them. They may not know where building can get them because they may not know about machine builders and integrators and stuff. Let's use coding, for example. They know where that can get them. The thing that I've seen happen a lot as well is that they'll start on that path because they know about it, or they know machining, so they'll start on that path. But man, once they get into that world, if it's not the right company, if it's not the right environment, which ties into what we were talking about earlier with autonomy, training, showing them a clear path to growing as a professional, they bounce. So that's an example of them being on that path. They're here, I'm walking, and I get shoved off of it because Greg was having a bad day and made me feel like a terrible human being. I fell off of it because Kathy in HR said that I was going to be getting 3 months of onboarding to help my skills. And I spent a month in onboarding and now I'm having to do this crazy job that's a high priority to the company. And I don't know what I'm doing still. It's like trial by fire, which can work a lot of the time, but trial by fire does not work on a large scale for a long period of time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I guess some things I'm hearing from you are, maybe the visibility issue isn't as bad as it once was, but maybe we're not taking advantage of it in the way we should. And kids are getting lost along the way as they, you know, maybe find their way into manufacturing, but potentially in the wrong settings.
That's exactly right. We're not going to where they are, where they're already excited, and showing them that, hey, we're passionate about this with you. Like, look what we do for business. Look where our passion brings value to the world, which is in our company and the products and the services we provide. Like, I think there needs to be a lot more of A, us going where they are, and then B, which a lot of companies I think do really well, is create an environment internally at their company to bring students in, or trade shows do that really well. But I think it has to be more of an active engagement on your team's plan. Maybe it's in the HR department's area of expertise when it comes to going where these kids are, going where these students are, and sharing in some of their passions.
Okay, let's take a quick break here. I want to let a couple of our strategists at Gorilla 76 tell you about something pretty cool that we're doing right now for marketing folks in the manufacturing sector. Peyton and Brendan, take it away.
So I'm Peyton Warren.
And I'm Brendan Forrest.
Twice a month, we host a live event called Industrial Marketing Live.
Right now, we have a group of 50 plus industrial marketers from a variety of manufacturing organizations that meet up digitally to learn, ask questions, network, and get smarter.
Every session has a designated topic, and one of our team members at Gorilla 76 opens up by teaching for the first half hour or so. Topics have included how to do a better manufacturing webinar, getting started with paid social on LinkedIn, how to optimize your website for conversions, creating amazing video content, and so much more.
After we break it down, we open it up to Q&A so we can help you apply all of this in your own businesses.
This is pure value, no cost, no strings attached, no product or service pitches, just a 100% unadulterated learning experience.
And on top of these live sessions, we've also opened up a Slack channel where attendees bounce ideas off each other and learn together between sessions.
We're building a true community of manufacturing marketing professionals here. So if you or someone at your company has the word marketing in his or her job title, please consider telling them about it. They can visit industrialmarketinglive.com to register.
We'd love to see you there.
What are some of the things that you've been doing, you said, for 6 years, right? This first robotics competition, you're around a lot of young people in manufacturing and you're just so involved in this community. Like, what are the things that you are finding get today's students or just younger people excited about careers, I mean, in manufacturing and automation? I mean, you talked about autonomy, right? But like, what are the things that are getting people excited and say, making them actually even consider this as a career path?
So the coolest thing that at least the kids that I talk to get excited about, and this is just with my experience, when I bring my machinist briefcase, so I have this big leather briefcase where I open it up and it has all of my beautiful, I have titanium in there, I have awesome ball tracking aluminum parts, I have some drawings and certifications. They love, and that's from a machinist standpoint, they love seeing this stuff, holding it, touching it, and being like, well, how'd you do this? How'd you do that? Like, they get real inquisitive. So showing them hands-on, like the real stuff that they can be making in a job with real-world applications is huge. As well as on the robot side, I've shown kids my videos before that, you know, I do on LinkedIn where it's just the educational stuff, teaching about a product, a company, whatever. They eat that up. There's like, that's a real robot out there? Is that a real application? It was this big old claw grabbing like sacks of dog food and stuff. And they were like, how does it get packaged or where does it go after this? Like, so even just showing them real world applications for the job that they're going into from a person that is like, because me, I can say I filmed that, I made this. So like, I'm your point guard. This is real. Being able to talk to somebody that's actually done the work, doing the work, like they get excited and they want to know like where they can go. And I think a lot of them just, they may not get that interaction. They may just get like a flyer handed to them and said, hey, here's our internship flyer. Talk to you in like a year, I guess.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's cool. I'm fresh off the Industrial Marketing Summit that I've talked about a bunch on this show a few weeks ago in Austin, and Jake Hall was down there. And first day, I'm just walking around setting stuff up and somebody's like, oh, Jay Call's out in the courtyard. You got to go out there. He's got his robotic dog, right? And you've seen this thing that he brings around to the shows. I think he's got a few of them actually, but you know, sure enough, he's out there with his like robotic dog doing tricks with it. And there are just crowds of people like from our event, but also just from the hotel and another convention going on, all just gathered around here. And but the thing is, he's like, you know, I'm talking to him after, he's like, this is the best marketing tool I have because it's something physical that people can see. And it starts conversations. And all of a sudden you're talking to people about robotics and what's possible with automation and things people didn't even realize exist. And so I don't, when you were talking about your briefcase and having some physical things you can hold in your hand and talk about or videos you can show, it just feels like that's such a powerful thing to be able to help somebody take this idea of manufacturing or automation when they have no context for that and say like, look what's possible here. Here are some physical things I've actually been working on, that it just feels like such a smart way to get people engaged and talking and asking the right questions.
Yeah. And it's nothing special. So when it comes to some of those pieces of technology, like the robot dog, or I have a robot arm at my house, it's a 6-axis robot on a big stand. So I'll bring that places. When it comes to that stuff, I can see how people can be like, oh, well, they have that and I don't. So that means I can't do what they do. I don't believe that, especially in our industry. I believe that we don't go around enough to other businesses, other companies within our sectors or sectors we're trying to dive into and try to partner with them. I mean, the way that I got my robot was doing all my LinkedIn stuff, and a company, I guess, in Germany, the German people, and so the head of the company, were like, hey, we saw this American, his channel looks cool. Like, we should give him a robot arm and see what he does. And so they sent it to me because they believed in my mission, what I do to train. And now I have it. I've brought it to 4 industry events, 2 schools. And one school actually bought one because of like after I talked about it and stuff. So now they're teaching on that robot in their class. But the reason I say all that is because I believe anybody in our industry, any company, can go to another company, not hat in hand, where it's like, hey, please give me something. I believe that we can all go to these businesses and try to work partnerships. We don't do that enough. And it's because we'll do this thing where I'm like, hey, Joe, I got this really cool idea I think you can be involved in. And you'll say, oh, that's awesome. Like, I'd love to get involved. And it turns into just a little daydream between us that we talk about when we see each other once a year, instead of me coming to you with a, hey, Joe, here's this plan. Here's this Google slide. Here's this Google Doc of this idea I want to run with you. Here's some budgetary numbers. Here's where I think we can help each other. What do you think? You know what I mean? I feel like not enough of us come with an actual plan. And I'm starting to realize that people that do business don't say no to good opportunity. And good opportunity is something that's the right time, right place, and it's right for them. You present that to a company and they don't say no. So that's just something, if anybody's listening and they're like, oh, well, I can't do that because of, no, I truly believe any of you out there have this ability. And on the video side, the creative side, I totally believe that your marketers, your team there can make something happen. I don't care if you're in IT. I don't care if you're in welding. I don't care what you're in. Like, you guys can do this. It just takes consistency and trials. And those are the two of the biggest things people will get hung up on, is not being consistent enough or not doing enough trials to get data back from. And getting data back from that stuff isn't just, hey, we tried this and it failed. That is not data. That is not a trial. That is you being sad because you feel like something didn't work. A trial is, hey, we're going in with this goal in mind, 1,000 views, and we want to try to get like 10 comments of people really interested in the product. You post it. It doesn't get the impressions you want, but you get 5 comments, you get one person asking, oh, I want, like, where can I get more information on this? Look at that. Look at what you produced and see how you can make it better. It doesn't have to be a full revamp. 10% better. Do another one. 10% better. Do another one. That's going to teach you consistency, and that's going to get you the data from doing these multiple trials, you know? Sorry to go on that tangent. That I get really passionate about companies trying and doing, because I've been in that boat where I think I can't do something because somebody has something. And you get that in your mind, dude. And like, depending on how you handle mental health and stuff, it can send you down a spiral. And when you spiral on a team, it's not good for anybody.
Yeah, it's a really good point. So, Jacob, shifting gears just a bit here. One thing that I think you've done really well, and I know you know the value of it, is sort of the importance of personal branding for your own career path. And so kind of speaking to, you know, some of the younger folks out there, not even the younger folks, but people who are, you know, trying to find their place and demonstrate their value in the manufacturing sector. I'd love to just hear some, you know, your advice about that, because you've put this to work, you've made it work for you, you've created demand for yourself as someone that people are trying to hire and, you know, have represent their brands. Like, what advice can you give people about how to become that?
The number one, and this is going out to people developing their personal brand or companies that are having to live in a personal brand world and a personal brand business. Personal branding is not the same as a personal company, if that makes sense. And I say that because companies think that if Greg has a personal brand, that means he's trying to start his own business. He's trying to sell something. He's trying to do something. That's taken away from what I want him to do here. In some cases, people build a personal brand. They use that personal brand to sell a service, to sell a product, whatever they want to do. That is true. But that does not mean that every personal brand is used as a selling platform. I have never sold anything with the content that I've developed on my personal channel, my personal brand in the past 2 years. Every post, everything that has ever been on my channel has never been paid by anybody, and it's been created for free by me for the past 2 years. That is a personal brand. I do that because I want people that I want to work with full-time to realize what I value, where my passions are, where my interests are, and what I'm bringing to the table. Like, if you have a salesperson for your company, and let's say you're a robot manufacturer, if you hire a salesperson that's had a personal brand for 2 to 5 years, and he has this network of small to medium-sized businesses in machine tending or producing their own parts and products and stuff, you're going to want that person as a sales team member. You know what I mean? And it doesn't mean that they now have to dissolve who they are and merge with your company so people forget about what they used to do and what they used to provide. So now they're just a billboard. It play off of the skills that they have now to feed into the business you're trying to cultivate for your company. So that's on the business side. And when it comes to people actually developing their personal brand, it doesn't have to be this big thing. Like, to start your personal brand, you don't have to post 5 times a week on LinkedIn or Instagram or TikTok. You don't have to be a video person. You don't have to be a graphic designer or an editor. You just have to make cool content that you enjoy and that you want to be known for. If you're in the baking industry and you want to be known for like your wacky cake decorations or something, then cool, post that. But don't just post pictures. Post about how you like research, how to hold like the little thing and how to do your designs. Like, get into it a little more. And if you want to be known as that person, be that person. And then you can start diving into, oh, well, it'd be cool if I had a creative background on my LinkedIn profile. Or what if I had like a funny little slogan that people knew me for and I can always comment on people's posts? Start taking those smaller steps once you start just trying to find what you want to be known for. And something that I've been leaning into more when it comes to my personal brand and what's changed my brand the past 6 months, because remember, it is evolving. You're growing as a person. I don't care how young or old you are. You're always changing. Ask people, and not just ask people, listen when people talk about you or to you. I have a lot of people that they don't depend on me, but they point people to me a lot. And I have to be the person that they're saying I am, or it's going to look bad on them and it's going to look bad on me. But more importantly, I care how they look. I can't let it look bad on them because I'm not who they say I am. But listen when people talk about you, listen when people describe you, and take some of that in to maybe that is who you are. That's not changing to be what people think you are, but listen to it, evolve from it. I started my career in education. I stepped away from it, did manufacturing automation, and I started becoming known as like the industry educator for automation, manufacturing, and then the subsectors like pharmaceutical, food, and bev. Like, I became that guy that was just known, like, if you go to Jacob's channel, you're going to learn something. And so I started leaning heavier the past 6 months back into education, and I realized that that's where I want to like end my career. At least that's what I'm thinking right now, is I want to work somewhere where I get to work in education and training and stuff. And that was just feedback I took from other people. So understand that, like, as you're developing your brand, listen to others and how they talk about you, how they think about you, and amplify that.
A really good advice in there. Jacob, I know you're doing some pretty exciting things that are kind of on the horizon here with the launch of what you're calling Manufacturing Kids and Automation Kids. And I'd love to give you a chance to talk about what that's all about.
Yeah. So the first one I'm dropping in April. So the MFGKids.com website's dropping in April. I'm making it myself in between all the show stuff I do and the job work I do. So it's been going on for the past, ideating for the past 8 months, started working on it the past 3 months. And so I'm hoping to drop it in April. But what that's going to be is a place for, I want it to be a centralized hub of information, resources, and learning, where there's so many curriculums and standards out there now, because we all know that our industry needs it, but our industry doesn't need all of us making a different standard. It doesn't need 50 companies coming up with their own curriculum, their own standard, and putting that out there. So instead of being just another place where I'm going to teach people, oh, this is how you become a application engineer, this is how you become a technician, I want this to be a place where A, industry can come to this channel and learn about what kids are doing out there in the real world. I'm going to have a blog center that kids can submit to, and they can win like prizes, scholarships, recognition, stuff like that to help build them in their career. But this is going to be real information from kids in the voice of kids telling industry what they think. So if somebody submits an article after it gets cleared and stuff, and it's about how they think that welding's a dirty job and like they would never do it, good. I want that out there because I want people that are in the welding industry to understand the stigmas that they're fighting against from the perspective of the younger generation. And I'm going to have a section for obviously industry professionals to be able to submit to get their blog posted or their opinions and stuff like that after it gets filtered through. So it's going to be a place for industry to learn about kids. It's obviously going to be a place for people looking to get involved in our industry to learn about us, because I'm going to have my videos on there. I'm going to have my articles on there. I'm going to have other companies' articles. But the big thing is I am going to cultivate what I believe to be the best in the world curriculums for automation technician, for CNC machining, for CAD, for CAM. I'm going to cultivate all of what I believe to be the best here in this one location. So if you're an educator, if you're an instructor, if you're an industry leader, and you're on this website learning, you have hopefully hundreds of thousands of other people learning the exact same thing. So you can reach out and say, hey, I was looking into this. Who's already got started in this? Instead of, hey, Greg, I started learning on company A's curriculum. Can you help me? Oh, no, what are you talking about? I'm using company B. I can't help you. And then you're on your own in this little island. Like, I at least want people that come here to this website to have other people that are learning with the same information that they are, so we can help better support each other. I'm also going to have a scholarship program where companies can feed into it. And at the end of every year, start of the next school year, we're going to have a, and this is all stuff I'm working on, but this is what I want it to be. Like, I'm telling you the full, like, end goal game I have for this website is this. And I also want to have a graduation ceremony for people entering our industry, young, old. If you're getting into this industry, if you got a new job, you won one of the scholarships to help fund your toolkit, to pay for some books, to pay for a computer, whatever you want, I want to have a industry recognized graduation party for these people. And I want to treat like entering this industry with a new job as like a really big deal. So that's just some of the main stuff that I want that channel to be, that platform to be. I know it's not going to happen all overnight, but I'm going to work at it until it is. And then the same thing for automationkids.com, except that's just going to have more focus on automation stuff.
Well, that's really awesome. I can't wait to see this. Make sure you send it my way when it's up and running, the first one in April. And yeah, it's really exciting. I'm sure it'll probably evolve in all kinds of ways that you can't even envision quite yet. But it seems like a need out there that you're filling, and yeah, really exciting. So, well, Jacob, is there anything I did not ask you about today that you'd like to add to the conversation?
No, I think hopefully we covered some topics and actually gave some calls to action for the people, for your listeners, where they can go and start? I think the partnership thing we talked about is a very big thing where I think people should go try it like right after this call. I really believe in that. I really believe you should look at your local FIRST Robotics program, VEX program, how you can get involved, how you can support the teams. And I don't know, above all else, man, something I talked about to some college kids last two Fridays ago that really hit home, that I think it's something that should never be forgotten, is like mental health stuff. I gave a suggestion to these students about how I've gone over mental health issues, spirals, and they're like, how do you get out of that though? Like I've been in those places where I just get like depressed or sad and like because of life, and like I just don't know how to get out of it. And something if I can share real quick is just, if you're still having challenges, issues in life, business, life, whatever it is, and you're trying to get back to where you believe, like how life used to be, like, oh, I remember when I used to be happy. I remember when I used to enjoy doing this. I remember when I could go home and not be angry at my job with my family. I really implore you to think about the things that you're doing day to day that do make you happy. For me, I started learning that I loved cooking. I taught myself how to cook. It made me excited and not just afraid of being home alone. I would cook these cool meals, and I still do it now. And I get excited when I cook and I do a really good job. And I'm like, oh my God, this tastes so good. Grab onto that. Grab onto that and build off of that. That's your base. Like you love cooking. It makes you happy. And keep doing that until you get to a place again where like you're filled with that life and you realize that, oh, what happened at work today, it's not that bad. That guy that cut me off on the road, it's not that big a deal. Once you start looking at stress and challenges like that, and you let them, you sit in it, you realize it's happening, but you start to remember like these little things that you love doing and you do really well, that can get you out of a lot of stuff, man.
That's some really good advice and good way to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Jacob, great conversation today. Can you tell our audience how they can get in touch with you and kind of learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah. So always on Jacob Sanchez on LinkedIn. That's like texting for me. So if you DM me on there, unless I'm at a show, flying, something like that, I get back to you. If you want a 10-minute call, 15-minute call, because you need help with something we talked about, I'm there for you. I fit the industry into my schedule. I mean, it's why I do what I do. And then I also have my TikTok channel now, which is pretty fun. It's been good. MFG Kid, Jacob Makes. Type one of those in and it'll take you to my new channel. So I've been enjoying those two platforms lately.
Beautiful. Well, Jacob, thanks, first of all, for everything you're doing out there for the manufacturing sector and to just shed a positive light on what's going on and to help get kids involved. I admire what you're doing and it's been really fun to watch you and even better to have you on the show. So thanks for doing this today.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you bet. As for the rest of you, I hope to catch you on the next episode of the Manufacturing Executive.
You've been listening to the Manufacturing Executive Podcast. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. If you'd like to learn more about industrial marketing and sales strategy, you'll find an ever-expanding collection of articles, videos, guides, and tools specifically for B2B manufacturers at gorilla76.com/learn. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.